ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what a big stand! Hey, how we doing?
Go ball, that ball hit pretty well the way, and there's a walk-up with two outs, Victor Caratini, the star of the game, the Astros, who are struggling in extra innings, walk it off, 10-9.
I like him a little dirty, and I like a couple of olives for the walk-off Caratini.
It's our good friend Todd Callis. He's Blank, I'm Brandon. Brian behind the glass. It is a Wednesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Don't call it a win streak, Blankers. Don't call it a win streak. The Houston Astros, for the first time all year, have won 3 games in a row. And it's a walk-off. A walk-off for the Astros.
It's amazing.
Now the fact that
we can say that the good karma coming from Mexico City after that weekend wasn't a fluke. They found a way to win another one. Maybe this is the big momentum changer. Maybe finally this is the one that keeps them going in the right direction. You would hope so. It was not easy by any stretch of the imagination, and there were times that I was ready to turn it off, but I'm glad I didn't, and I'm glad they got the win.
When were you going to turn it off?
I was very frustrated, and I already thought about this because I hate having this conversation with you, but I was frustrated enough that when they blew the 8-3 lead, it got to 8-8, and then Abreu started putting the leadoff guy on again. I'm going, oh, please don't do this to me. Don't screw this game up now with a game that I thought was over. And then I thought that they were going to lose it in extra innings. I really did, because I didn't think that I'd see Josh Hader to come out for a second inning. I thought, well, here he's going to go to Seth Martinez again or someone lesser than, and we're going to lose another game.
You were going to turn it off in a tie game.
I wasn't really going to turn it off. I was just extremely frustrated.
Yeah. Yeah, that was frustrating.
Montero was where it started for me.
They should have gave him a clean inning. I didn't love Espada not giving Montero a clean inning. I didn't love him riding Hunter Brown another inning. I thought that was unfair to Hunter Brown. At the same time, you have this big lead, blah, 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 blah. Good win for the Astros. The guards had the best record in the American League coming into that game yesterday. Like, they're currently, 1 month into the year, the standard. They're the standard in the American League, and the Astros whooped up on them yesterday for most of that game. Guards came back, tied it. Astros win in extra innings. That was now the Caratini thing, was it just me, or did you think that Caratini lined out to right? Like, as soon as he hit the baseball, I was like, okay, that's good wood. And then he, like, dropped it, and it kind of looked like he moped. Like, he kind of pouted. I was like, oh, great, that's right to the right fielder. And then it's like, oh, no, that was his bat flip. As soon as it came off the bat and then his reaction, I thought it was a line drive right to the right fielder.
Yeah.
I thought it was caught.
I thought that it wasn't high enough to get out. I thought he hit it pretty solid. By no means was I thinking that was going to get out. I thought that was going to score the run or it was going to get caught. I didn't pay that much attention to his reaction because he didn't John Singleton it and really try and show out.
His reaction looked like he pouted.
Maybe a little. I knew he hit it hard. I just wasn't sure that it was high enough to get to the wall, and thank God it got a little higher than that.
Yeah, that was what a way to win it. I wouldn't mind seeing him play a little bit more, quite frankly. I wouldn't mind seeing him catch a little bit more. Yiner play first base. Now, Joe Espada dispelled that notion. Joe Espada said that's not going to be something that's happening. That's not an option. He mentioned that, you know, Singleton's going to get a run of play. Reports are that Trey Cabbage is being called up, so maybe you see him over there a little bit. Mauricio Dubon was taking ground balls at first base. Maybe you see him over there a little bit against lefties. And then Joey Loperfido had the fat glove. He had the flat glove working on short hops and things like that. So I think those are your options at first base, although I wouldn't mind Yiner Diaz mixed in over there to get Caratini behind the dish, who is a better defensive catcher. Not that Yiner is bad, but Caratini's better. And then Caratini's been a find for you. He's really helped out. That was a shrewd offseason pickup that has paid dividends for Dana Brown and the Houston Astros. But vibes were good. It was good to see Joey Loperfido up there. I thought he was going to bat with the bases loaded every single time there for a moment. Had the two RBI single, had some moments. Was it the third at bat where he takes the big swing at a fastball out of the zone and then watches two fastballs right down the middle?
Yep.
A little frustrating. But I like the fact that he was cool, he was calm, he was collected. Like, You're batting with the bases loaded, one out, your first ever major league start, and you're sitting there spitting at breaking balls in the dirt and then getting a good pitch and driving it into center field. I like the mentality. Like, yeah, he struck out twice. Yeah, he was only 1-for-5. But I just one game sample. I'm not watching minor league baseball. You can kind of sense that he's a guy who puts together some solid at-bats. He's tough to get out. You might be able to strike him out, but he's a guy who's going to put together some quality ABs.
Oh, there's no doubt. When I watched him go into even his first at-bat, you could tell he goes up there. He's got a plan. He's like you said, he's calm. He gets himself set. I think he's got a good idea, like from at-bat to at-bat, like what he's looking for. And, yeah, we said it going in. He's going to swing and miss. It's just what he does. But it seems like he's got a good concept and a good idea when he goes to the plate. And I thought that the base hit he got for his first ever major league hit in that situation with the bases juiced was a fantastic piece of hitting, and he squared it up. So I'm excited to see more of him. I liked what I saw of him, except he did strike out, but we expected that. Mm-hmm. But overall, I just like the way he looks. He looks confident out there. He looks like he's under control, and I'd like to see more of him.
Yeah, I like that you like the way that he looks. I'm excited to see more of his plate appearances, more of his at-bats. I do think that he is a boost to this starting nine, obviously. I mean, you had a first baseman that was hitting 099. Chaz has been horrific. Jake Myers probably deserves to play a little bit more, but Jake Myers hasn't been fantastic. So excited to see him. It was nice to see Alex Bregman finally knock a ball out of the ballpark, his very first of the year, his only hit in 5 at-bats yesterday. But the timing was good. Like, you trailed 3-0 early. He comes to bat, 2 runners on, bottom of the 3rd inning, and he gets a hold of one. And I kind of had a feeling he was going to homer off Carrasco because he had a solid at-bat in his first plate mm-hmm. appearance. He yanked that one foul. I was like, he's kind of seeing Carrasco pretty good. But good to see Alex Bregman. Hopefully he starts to get on a tear, because I think that Alex Bregman has to be good for the Astros to be good.
He does. It was a get-well game in a lot of ways, because that's a game they normally lose when they were finding ways to lose. You mentioned Bregman, but Singleton and Bregman both getting their first bombs, and that was much needed and way overdue. But they both gave you a little bit extra help offensively. But you just feel like there's a better vibe around the team right now. You feel like that they have a lot of positive energy, and you hear the stories from Jordan and everybody in Mexico City, and then trying to make sure that stayed with them when they got back home. They won at home again too, which is always a big story, because they didn't do that as much as they should have a year ago. But the fact is, it seems like they've got some good mojo on their side right now. They've got a lot of momentum. They're getting pitchers back, and maybe they're getting a little bit more help offensively, no matter who plays first base, because you do have some more qualified big league hitters that you can go to kind of put in different situations that could give you, a chance for more production.
Yeah, I'm not a big believer in momentum. Like, I think that it carries some weight. I'm not a huge believer in momentum, but the vibes do seem better for the Astros. Mm-hmm. I think it was Mexico City. They probably listened to some mariachis, had a few margaritas. That makes everybody feel good. Anytime you have a margarita or two, you're listening to some mariachis for a few hours, how does that not immediately put you in a good mood? Like, whenever I want to get into a good mood, I listen to some Salinas. Immediately puts a smile to my face. So it's not a surprise to me that the vibes are better now that the Astros have come back from Mexico City. But good to see them get the win. 713-780-ESPN if you want to opine on the victory for the Houston Astros. 713-780-3776. J-Lo, we're not calling him that. What do you think of the nickname that the Astros are trying to put onto him? They're calling him Joey Cooks.
Yeah, I wasn't big on that.
I'm not a huge fan of that one either.
No.
It doesn't really roll off the tongue.
When I heard Blummer was thinking up a home run call for him, like his Martini Caratini, whatever he did, I was thinking that he's going to call him Joey from the block, just because I think he's going to try and tie in the J-Lo.
That will be interesting.
Yeah, that was the first. I go, don't tell me he's going to call him Joey from the block.
That would be interesting. If you call the shot on that, that would be very interesting. How do you feel about Blummer's having, like, that's basically a John Sterling thing, like where he has a home run call for all these guys. I'm not a big fan of it, if I'm being honest.
Sterling's was a lot more forced. At least Blummer gets a little bit more into the movies with the Vince Vaughn and the Ma the Meatloaf, and or was that Will Ferrell? And you can get some of them, but I think you can. It has to come across natural. If there's any inkling that it's forced, then it's not worth your time, because it just doesn't come off right.
Yeah, I don't really. But the difference between Sterling and Blum is Sterling's the play-by-play guy.
True.
Like, and Blum's interjecting, and it's. I know he's waiting for the call to be over. It's just. I don't know if I love that. Willie's asking us, did I just hear that Cabbage is being called up? That the reports are that Cabbage is going to be the move to replace Jose Abreu on the roster. Not surprising. I thought there was a chance it could be Hensley, so you can add an extra infielder. Because it does now seem like there is a surplus. Like, now you have three left-handed guys who are capable of playing first base. John Singleton, Joey Loperfido, and Cabbage. Now, Cabbage and Loperfido can both play the outfield, but again, both left-handed. Like, it kind of feels like that's the same thing. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And the Astros lineup is out today, by the way, just released. Altuve leads it off at second, Bregman at third, Yordan DHs, yes. Bats third, Kyle
Where
Tucker in right. I think the pace is pretty close.
Okay.
I think the pace is pretty close, but I don't think that the Loperfido and the Cabbage stuff bodes
well for
you. No, that
doesn't help me.
No, I don't think it bodes well for you. Tucker bats fourth and right. Pena in the five hole at short. Singleton's in the lineup again. Oh, this is interesting. Singleton's in the lineup again. He plays first base and bats sixth. Caratini catches, bats seventh, so no Diaz. Loperfido is in the eighth spot, playing left field, and then Mauricio Dubon's in center field, batting ninth. I don't know who's on the mound for Cleveland. That probably factors in. Oh, McKenzie, you're right.
McKenzie, yep.
I'm surprised Loperfido's batting eighth today.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
I guess the spot is he's rewarding Singleton and Caratini for homering, which I guess that's fine.
And,
that doesn't bother
and Yiner's getting the day off?
Yiner's getting the day off from catching.
Okay. Well, I mean, okay.
The Dubon in center again. I think a spot of his borrowed a move from Dusty Baker, where he's going to play center field when Justin Verlander's on the mound. Yep. They like his arm.
Yeah, B-Mac and I have talked about this before. It was the unforced force, but now it seems to be it's a fact no matter what, that he, whether anyone wants to admit it or not, he's the personal center fielder.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the manager's call. Verlander said that he's never opined about who one plays behind him or who catches him. He said the only time he did that was like 3 years ago. Who was the other catcher? Not Maldonado when they won the World Series.
It
wasn't Vasquez. It was
Gattis
the guy before
and
that.
Brian.
It was after that era before Vasquez. I can't remember. He played on the Rangers for a while.
Oh yes, I know exactly what you're
and
talking
he,
about.
He caught Verlander in the Cy Young year. The
yes,
second
he did.
Cy Young year in. I guess that would have been 18. Was Cole's last year 18 with the Astros? No, it was 17 because they went to the World Series. Or was that 19? No, that was 19.
19. It was 19.
2019, they had Maldonado and they had the catcher
Robinson
that I can't
Chirinos.
Think of it. Chirinos. Chirinos was the Verlander's personal catcher that year. And the final game of the year, I would listen to Verlander talk about this because he said the only time he's ever told a manager that he wants a catcher or any position player was the final start in 2019. He was fighting with Gerrit Cole for the Cy Young, final day of the regular season, and he said that they were going to catch Maldonado and not Chironis, or however you say his name. And Verlander's like, no, let's not mess with it. I'm chasing the Cy Young. Let's have Robinson catch me. He said that's the only time he's ever done that. But whenever we heard Dusty Baker talk about why he likes Dubon in center with Verlander, because he has a bigger arm. And Verlander's a fly ball pitcher. Right. He's thinking of runners tagging up and Dubon being able to limit the running game a little bit. So Espada has borrowed a move from Dusty Baker. He's also borrowed the Yordan batting third move from Dusty Baker and Jeremy Booth. So
imitation, most sincere form of flattery, and you learn something with the guys you work with. That's fine.
Yeah, it's interesting. So that's the lineup today. What's wrong with Espada's lineup? 713-780-3776 or at Jeremy Branham. Are we done with Hunter Brown? Are we done with him? We'll talk about that. How about Josh Hader wanting the baseball in the 10th inning? Two innings from Josh Hader? That's not possible. Nobody believes that. We're going to be giving away a $25 Highway Cantina gift card coming up later in the program. Not telling you when. I'm not blowing that. You have to stick with us. You have to listen to us forever. What is your first month grade on the Houston Astros? All of that and more. 713-780-ESPN HRMP listener line. 713-780-3776. We're on the Twitch. Some of us are twitch.tv/ESPN975 on YouTube at ESPN Houston. Blankers is at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. And on TikTok, I'm at Jeremy J. Branham. All right, are we done with Hunter Brown? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN975, ESPN925. I'm done with potholes. Can't stand these sons of guns. That's why Third Rock Renewables is the best. You're tired of repairing these potholes. Of course you're tired of it. Whether it's a parking lot, a ranch road, road, lay down yard, truck parking, whatever, Third Rock Renewables is for you. You can just throw out a lay down yard. You can throw down a road. You can throw down a parking lot with mechanical concrete from Third Rock Renewables, and you can fix these potholes too, which are super annoying. Third Rock Renewables patented technology, mechanical concrete, is the only low-cost, industrial-strength, sustainable base that turns these end-of-life tires into a virtually indestructible building product. It's fantastic. You can do it for your lay-down yard, for your parking lots, to fix those potholes, ranch road, whatever. You want mechanical concrete. So call Third Rock Renewables 713-305-0507 to find out how mechanical concrete is for you, and also it's going to save you money. They're going to cut your maintenance costs by 75% or more. Why wouldn't you want that? If you mention ESPN 97.5, you'll also get a 20% discount. So call Third Rock Renewables 713-305-0507. Find out what they're all about. Fix these potholes. Throw down a good lay-down yard. Throw down a good truck parking lot. Fix this road that you have. Fix all of it with Third Rock Renewables. 713-305-0507 or visit them online, thirdrockrenewables.com, thirdrockrenewables.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Hey, Blankers, you know what today is? You know what it's going to be?
Yeah, I do, JT.
It's going to be May. are we done with Hunter Brown? Yesterday, Hunter Brown, 6 runs, 5 hits, 2 walks, struck out 7, 5 1/3, gave up 2 dongs. Are we done with Hunter Brown? I heard some people talk about how they need to send Hunter Brown to West Palm Beach to build the confidence of Jose Abreu. Are we done with Hunter Brown?
I'm not. I'm not, because of the fact that I know that he's got a really, really good 1-2 punch fastball, and it's a slider. It's a cutter. I'm done with the slow curveball. I'm done with, whether you call it a knuckle curveball or whatever curveball he's throwing, more times than not, and we talked about it earlier in one of his earlier starts when he got hammered. It just sits on the middle of the plate when he doesn't control it well enough. And one of the 2 bombs he gave up last night was another one of them. I think he's capable of being a reliever on this team. I think he's capable of giving you an inning and relying on those 2 pitches and maybe mixing a change. But I'm pretty much done seeing him as a starting pitcher right now for the Astros.
Yeah, I think that's a casual take, and I think it's a casual take of we're done with Hunter Brown. Hunter Brown was dominant from the 2nd through 5th inning yesterday. He ran into trouble in the first. He didn't give up much hard contact, quite frankly, in that first inning. You had 2 runners on, didn't get the ball hard once. And all of a sudden, you know, he's in a 3-0 count to Naylor. That's where I'm, the most critical of Hunter Brown. Stop getting behind in counts. But even the Naylor home run was a home run in one ballpark. That's a fly ball caught on the shy of the warning track at most places. Hunter Brown from the 2nd through the 5th inning against the Cleveland Guardians, who have a top 3 offense in the American League, was flat out dominant. He struck out 7 guards. He didn't give up a run from the 2nd through the 5th inning. And I think that Joe Espada put him in a tough spot coming back out for the 6th. I did not want him back out in the 6th inning because the start had been a grind. The first inning was hard to get through, and then he was pitching really, really well. And then he got through that 5th inning, hadn't given up another run since the 1st inning. Pull him. That's the spot that you take him out feeling good about his start. Didn't take him out. His pitch count went to 97. It's like, well, you know, you're up by, you know, a good amount of runs. Let's try to buy another inning. That way we don't have to go to our key guys in the bullpen. Well, this is why you have a Seth Martinez. This is why you have a Taylor Scott. Get Hunter Brown out of the game when he's feeling good about himself. I thought it was a managerial mistake by Joe Espada. Forced him to throw 97 pitches, which is the most pitches he's thrown all season, and he ended up giving up, you know, not all the 5 runs in the 6th inning were his, but he gave up 3 more. Rafael Montero picked up 2, which is another thing. Like, I don't want to use Rafael Montero with a big lead, but give him a fresh inning. Don't have him coming in these fireman situations. I thought it was managerial malpractice by Joe Espada to bring Hunter Brown back out for the 6th inning. Gave up 3 runs in the first. I feel like they were unlucky runs in the 1st inning. A couple of bleeders and then a bloop home run into the Crawford boxes. That was a home run in one place in the entire major leagues. Should have never been out for the 6th inning. I saw a lot of bright spots from Hunter Brown yesterday. I was super encouraged by his start.
That's great. I mean, I think, like I said, I think he's got major league stuff. But I think that he's going to be the odd man out once you start getting everybody back. And I think that they're probably better suited to try Urquidy when he comes back, and I think there's a spot for him in the bullpen. I'm not saying send him down to Sugar Land, but I'm saying, you know what, for the time being and what we've seen, and because this team has dug a hole for itself and it's trying to dig its way out and starting pitching is going to be vitally important, then I'm not saying send him down, but I'm fine with him putting in the bullpen.
The next one's going to be Javier. The Astros announced their rotation for the weekend. It did not include Javier. It did have a TBA for Sunday, but I also heard Dana Brown on the flagship this morning say that they're getting Javier back next week. So maybe it's not this weekend for Javier. Maybe it is next weekend. Astros going with Blanco Friday, Fromber Saturday, and then TBA. He's had a good year on Sunday. So the next guy, Javier, whenever he comes back, who are you kicking out of the rotation?
So that if Javier, Fromber, JV, Blanco, and who am I? And Urquidy's not back yet, so who am I missing?
You're missing Arrighetti.
Arrighetti's going down. Yeah, and Hunter Brown's still going to – until you have the ability to bring Urquidy back, then I think Hunter Brown will stay. But I trust Hunter Brown and his stuff more than I trust Spencer at Arrighetti's.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to say that, like, I think Hunter Brown's going to be a Cy Young this year. But there was a lot of encouraging things that I liked in that start yesterday from Hunter. We look at the three-run bloop home run. Now, don't get behind 3-0. Like, that's your mistake. Mm-hmm. Don't get behind 3-0. Get ahead of these hitters. Challenge a little bit early. Now, you got to make your pitch. You can't just leave it right down the middle, which he got in trouble with in Kansas City. But I thought he was really stinking good from the second through the fifth, and I didn't love that Espada brought him back out there for the sixth at all. Are we done? I think he's done. Should have booked two to Florida. So this is kind of where everybody's at with Hunter Brown. Hunter Brown was 50-50 in his best year. I don't think he'll ever make it. Maybe in the bullpen because he's got some heat. He's also not good the first time out. Like, in the first inning, he's been awful. So, like, oh, we'll make him a reliever. He's good for one inning. In what world has he been pitching well in the first inning? If anything, give him an opener and let him be the follower.
Remember when Keuchel went through that? Keuchel went through that one year where the first inning, you could tell the first inning is where he's going to give up any runs at all. And then from the first inning on after that, he was settled in. He was great.
Yeah. I don't really remember that. It must have been before the Cy Young year, huh? Or was it after the Cy Young
year? It was right after the Cy Young year. Greg Rajan of the Chronicle and I were tweeting back and forth about it because he was on the whole, you know, Hunter Brown with the rough first innings. And I'm like, It reminds me of Keuchel in the year. It's a year or two after, I think, after the Cy Young, when he was still very, very good, but when he was going to struggle, he was going to struggle in the first inning.
He just labored through the first.
Yep.
5-8-2-4, I'm not done with Hunter Brown, but I'm done with both hitting coach and pitching coach, not being able to elevate these players. That's been a popular trend while the Astros have been bad, too. 3-1-0-6, as far as Hunter Brown, I watched the game. I don't know if you heard or not, but his velocity was actually up 1.5 miles per hour on the season average at 97, 98 a few times. I think he's still a project, but he has potential to be a stud if he can get his command together. He had a season-high 7 Ks. See, again, like, I'm not happy with the result. Like, if you go 5 1/3, I don't want you giving up 6 runs. It should have been 5 innings, 3 runs. A spot has screwed him over. But there were some bright spots. Like, okay, like, this is the Hunter Brown that gives reason for hope. This is the Hunter Brown that, okay, you see some potential. Don't want the result, but I saw some things that were super encouraging. 6-0-3-0, yes, get him off my bad word team. And then Zach says he was solid yesterday. Espada shouldn't have left him in for the sixth inning. Where do you stand on him in the sixth?
I agree with you on the sixth. And I was watching the pitch count, and I think that he puts a lot of stress on himself too, and rightfully so. And, you know, he knows that, you know, he's another guy that I fully believe he has the passion. He wants to do better. He knows he's been off to a rocky start. So I thought he was pressing a little bit, and there was a lot of, you know, the mental side of it too, where I wouldn't have put him out there for another inning. But I believe that his first two pitches are above average major league pitches. I believe that he can pitch in this in the bigs, and I believe that there's a spot for him long term in the rotation. And so I'm not sending him down to the people that are – I just don't understand people's mentality that you can't see the difference between a guy that struggled with his starts and he's trying to implement a new pitch, but the fact that you're just willing to just throw him down to Sugar Land and say, yeah, I'm done with him. It's not like pitchers like this with an arm like that grow on trees.
Yeah, it's a microwave society where you want everything immediately and you want it now. To your point about the curveball, that's been his worst pitch other than his slider's been pretty bad too. In terms of like slugging, just slugging and expected slugging, the knuckle curve is by far his worst pitch. I think that you're onto something, just like flat out abandoning that pitch.
Yes.
Because he has been getting rocked on that pitch.
So some guys call the
Baseball Savant has it as a knuckle curve.
Do they? But and then no, I agree with that. But do they separate the cutter and the slider?
Yeah. So they five pitches that they list on Savant for Hunter Brown is four seamer, uh-huh. cutter, knuckle curve, split, and slider.
I would, to be honest with you,
his slider's been atrocious too.
Yeah, I was going to say, but I was going to go with the cutter, the fastball, and the changeup for the time being.
That's probably a splitter. That's probably
the splitter.
He didn't
right.
have a change.
Right. So the split was you know about the same kind of action to it. I would just work with those three pitches. I think those are above it. Those pitches will get him through innings.
Yeah, he's getting hammered on his knuckle curve and his slider. The other three have been pretty good. His four-seamer's not great either, but I think it's been location. Like, he's leaving it over the middle of the plate. Like, his fastball plays when he's spotting it. When he's leaving it middle-middle, major league hitters are going to take advantage of that. When Javier's back, I'm with you that Arrighetti gets bumped out of the rotation. When Urquidy comes back, that's a difficult one for me. Like, I'm glad that we get to see like two, three more starts of Hunter Brown mm-hmm. before we have to make that decision. Because, like, I think there were some promising signs with Hunter Brown yesterday. If he can all of a sudden get it going a bit, where he's putting together the second through fifth inning like he did yesterday, as opposed to the first, which I think it was a little overrated, but the first and the sixth, then you have a guy that it's going to be difficult to kick out of the rotation. But if he's pitching more like the first and the sixth, it's going to be very easy to kick him out of the rotation. And quite frankly, how he's pitched all year. So
it's kind of what we said when we were talking about France before this too, that you can pitch for your spot. I'm fine with that if he's. You know, if he's working on things and eliminating pitches and because again, his stuff is too good not to. And the other thing is it's going to take a while for Urquidy to get ramped up anyway. And you got to see where he's going to be and how long he can go regardless. But if he's got a couple more starts where he can fine tune some things, because I agree with you, the control was another issue for me. If he could just spot the pitches that he has. And he doesn't need five pitches in his repertoire, per se. I think he can get guys out.
Yeah. I mean, control is his issue. So, well, he's not very good at control. Like, he might not ever be. Like, it's always been his bugaboo is his command. But I'm not ready to call it yet on Hunter Brown and Urquidy. Like, let's see what the next three starts look like before I'm kicking out, you know, Brown or Urquidy out of the rotation.
In his defense, too, he got screwed on a lot of the low calls last night, too, where there was three or four that were legit strikes that weren't being called for him.
Yeah, that home plate umpire had a bad zone, I thought. Angel Hernandez behind the dish tonight.
Oh, great. The guys were pumping him up, too, in the late innings. Going, I thought he had a real fair strike zone after they were critical of him during the game. I go, wait a minute. What you guys were saying all night he wasn't getting the low strike.
Yeah, I noticed that, too. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Chris, you're in the hive of the bees. What's up, Chris?
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. Best sports talk show in Houston going right now, so keep up the good work. A couple of things. Last night in the first inning, Hunter is getting squeezed by the umpire, I think, and you could see both the catcher and Hunter not happy with some of the calls. So I thought with one out, two men on before the home run, I know we're limited on how many times, you know, the coach can go out to the pitcher's mound or the catcher, but I just think, I don't care what inning it is, guys. If I see my pitcher struggling mentally, and we know Hunter's been struggling mentally, if it's first inning or not, I think that was a great opportunity there to kind of slow him down, let him catch his breath, let him, maybe do some Carl Correa mound visit talk and move on. And I had one other comment, guys. We've won three in a row. And I really do think the turning point of the season was the moment Jeremy kissed Kyle Tucker on the neck. That's when we started winning, guys. Take care, buddy.
Checks in the mail, Chris. I thought he meant me for a second.
Buddy. Yeah, I didn't know what you were – I thought he was referring to you as well, too.
I was like, who did I kiss? I don't remember this.
That was the thing last year, right, where Yordan was kissing Maldi on the neck?
I think they kind of kissed each other.
Late in the year, maybe. I think that started to be a thing where after a home run, Yordan would kiss Maldi on the neck.
Yeah, un besito is what it was. I agree with Chris on the mound visit thing. Like, hey, you're limited on how many you get, but use them wisely. It's like a timeout, right?
Yep.
Like, a basketball team has X amount of timeouts. Another team's on a roll, they're on a rally. What do? You take a timeout to kill the rally. I think that Chris is on to something there. Maybe Hunter Brown's got a little bit of Fromber going on upstairs. I haven't seen that much, but he does get, instead of getting like you know, how would I say it with Fromber? Fromber gets, like, frazzled.
He's rattled.
Hunter Brown gets more, like, mad, I think.
You could see, and to Chris's point, you could see him. He was talking to himself, and rightfully so, and that's one of those moments. Like, the one thing I think about the mound visits, it's one thing if you're in a tight game late, but regardless, you don't want to leave any in the bank account at the end of the game if you don't have to. Don't worry about it when you might not need it late in the game or what might be to come when you know that could be a turning point in the game. And you can see it. We all could see it. He was right. You could see him talking to himself, biting his lower lip, ticked off that he wasn't getting some calls. Well, go out and give him a minute.
Yeah, that's a good call by Chris. He's a smart guy, very smart guy. 9458, last caller must not know who John and Lance are. Okay, never text into the Killer Bees. No, we can't keep saying he, Brown, is a project. He has not had control since he's been on this team. He's never had control. You don't just gain control. He'll never be a quality starter. Book it. I disagree. Last night, he wasn't bad. Other than that 3-0 count, he only walked 2 in 5 1/3. Like, give me 7 strikeouts, 2 walks over 5 innings. Don't bring him back out for the 6th. Limit that damage to 3. But yesterday, I mean, he's never had control. Yes, I do think he's going to be a quality starter in the bigs. And I saw good signs yesterday.
Mm-hmm. I don't disagree with you on that. I believe in his stuff. I'll say that. I just never want to see that stupid knuckle curve thing again.
Fair enough. I think you're onto something there. 713-780-ESPN. Josh Hader yesterday said, quote, "I want it." Does this dispel the narrative that he's only the 9th inning guy? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I thought Josh Hader was fantastic yesterday. Struck out 4 over 2 innings. I've gotten 38 minutes into the show, Blankers, and I haven't mentioned my hatred for the Manfred Mann extra innings.
You did a good job.
So much.
You're pacing
so
yourself.
Gimmicky.
I hate
Here
it
you
too.
Go, team. Here's a runner at second base. It changes the dynamic of everything. You have Hader, who was dominant in the 9th inning, and then I thought he was dominant in the 10th. They gave up the little double into the corner. But, hey, pitchers work around 2-out doubles. But because of the Manfred Man, it scores a run. I hate the Manfred Man. Sorry, I got sidetracked. Josh Hader, I thought, was great. He struck out 4 in 2 innings, gave up the 1 run.
It's funny. It's like one of those things that can unite Dodger fan, Yankee fan, Astros fan, all fans. I think that I've got a couple of buddies. One's a diehard Yankee fan. One's a diehard Dodger fan. They all are in unison with us, with me, and I know how you feel. It has no place in baseball. It just drives me nuts that he can be as good as he was striking out the first two guys. And you give up a hit, and suddenly you're down a run, and it's like, well, that sucks. I know you're trying to save pitchers, and it's all about in the courtesy of time and trying to make things speed it up. It's not part of the game. It's not the way it's supposed to be played.
Just in games and ties. You know how I stand on that. Anyways, Hader was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Afterwards, Joe Espada said that the coaching staff approached Hader about going another inning, and according to Espada, Hader replied, quote, "I want it." Espada said afterwards, "It's something I don't really like doing, of Hader throwing 2 innings." A few weeks ago, Joe Musgrove, former teammate of Josh Hader, a former Houston Astro, he was part of the trade that got you Gerrit Cole. He said, "Having a closer that you can go out there and rely on for more than just 3 outs is huge to us here," Musgrove said. He's always willing to take the ball, and we're grateful for it. Which, of course, this was shade to Josh mm-hmm. Hader, who, before he got his big contract, refused to go multiple innings. There was a thought that he refused to do that with the Astros. Joe Espada said that, you know, he's going to pitch the 9th. You've had other people say that he's not going to be somebody that goes multiple innings. Well, here it was yesterday. The Astros looking for their first 3-game winning streak of the year, trying to close out what has been a terrible month with a victory, and you have your $19 million man saying, "Give me the baseball," and I loved every bit of it.
I love it, too, and I love it for all the reasons you mentioned and so much more because of the fact that he got off to a slow start. The team got off to a slow start. You know that the comments Musgrove made, whether he admits it publicly or not, he heard them, he knows. But I think credit to Blummer, too, who mentioned what we all were thinking, which we had heard with his time in Milwaukee and in San Diego, and that was that until he got paid, he wasn't willing. He didn't want to take the risk. He didn't want to go multiple innings. And Blummer said, maybe now he got the money. He got taken care of. He's set. So he's going to feel more comfortable doing it. I don't care the reasons why at this point. What I care more than anything else is, to me, it seems like a guy that realizes the team got off to a really crappy start. They're trying to dig themselves out of a hole. They know that their record in extra innings has sucked. The pitchers they've gone to in extra innings have led to some of the suck. And that he felt good enough. He didn't throw a ton of pitches in the first inning out there. He hasn't been used that much either, because for all the fans that were clamoring and saying, well, you can only use Hader in save situations, he only had three, I think, to this point in the season, three or four. So he hasn't hardly pitched that much either. All things in a perfect storm said he should go back out there if he wants to. He wanted to. I love it, too.
Yeah, that was great to see. And it's not something that I want to see all the time. Like, I don't need to see Hader pitch two innings in every single one of his appearances.
No.
But in a spot like it yesterday, you tie game, you're trying to get him to put up a scoreless ninth inning, and then you're trying to go win the game in the bottom of the ninth. Okay, didn't work out for you. You know, you couldn't score off Class A, which you're not unique in that. That guy's a sick son of a gun, too. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, okay, well, Hader, you know, he got through the ninth inning, even though he was being squeezed, like Dre says on Twitch, and boy, was he. Well, I wasn't worked that hard in the ninth. You know, I'm fresh. I'm good. Give me the baseball. I ended up getting the win. Somebody asking if that run that was scored in the extras goes against him. It goes against his run total, but it does not go against his earned run total, so it does not affect his ERA. And the question was, does it affect his ERA? It doesn't. But yeah, I think this does dispel the notion, though. Like, asking the question, and 713-780-3776, asking the question, does Hader wanting the ball yesterday in the 10th dispel the narrative that he's only a ninth inning guy?
I think it does. I think whatever the circumstances were previous, this is a new day. It's a different situation. He's going to be here for the long haul. But the bigger thing for me is I'm with you. Look, if this team gets on a roll, if it starts winning games, and if there's close games, and he's getting into a more consistent rhythm too, where he is saving games in the ninth inning, then you don't want him to do this as a frequent thing. But because of the circumstances of not that many opportunities to get out there, he had been basically sitting on the shelf for about a week. The fact of the matter is, every circumstance is going to be different. But if they get rolling, absolutely not. I don't want to see these two-out situations. In the playoffs, you never know. But the fact is that it's not an ideal all-the-time thing. But last night, I believe totally it was the right thing.
Yeah, by need only. Yep. By need only. But to me, it does dispel this whole narrative of where, like, he's only going to pitch the ninth. He's only going to be a three-out guy. He doesn't want the baseball. Because that's all we heard in the offseason, mm-hmm. right? Well, Hader doesn't want the baseball. There was a lot of things that went into that. Like, a lot of it was the fact that he was, you know, in arbitration. They told him that, you know, that we value saves. We don't value the two three-inning appearances that you're putting together. Okay, well, you hear that. You're messing with my money now. If you're telling me that your value is saved, then my value is going to be saves, as opposed to the multi-innings. The whole not taking the baseball with the Padres, like, they were all but out of the race, and it was in the regular season. It wasn't the playoffs, and Haters went on multiple podcasts, and goes, look, if it's this playoffs, like, yeah, give me the baseball all the time. So I think that Hader gets a bad rap there, and I think that Hader proved that narrative is something that maybe it existed in the past. I'm not going to completely eliminate that. But I think that if you absolutely have to have him, yesterday you didn't absolutely have to have him. You would have liked to have him. I think he dispelled that notion, and I love that. Like, hey, this is your $19 million free agent acquisition. Things have been rocky. You only have had three save opportunities, like you pointed out, Blankers. Give me the ball. I want to win this game. We're going to beat the guards tonight. And that's what I want. That's what I want from my $19 million closer.
No doubt. And you know, he likes this environment. I don't know what environment he's coming from in San Diego. But the other thing, it's like when we talked about John Gernard and his ankle. The thing is that you can't mess with another man's money. And the sad state of affairs right now is, from a fan's perspective, you're supposed to be out there. No matter what, you're supposed to be out there and you're supposed to be doing it. But you know, everybody is wired differently. And if it was something that he was thinking about until he got taken care of financially, then so be it. It sucks, but it is a reality in professional sports. But now he's in a good spot. He knows they've had a bad start, and he's willing to do whatever the manager is looking for him to do. And because we don't think it's going to happen on a regular basis, I'm for it. I like it, and I'm appreciative of his attitude.
He was nasty, too. He was nasty.
He got squeezed. There's no doubt he was getting squeezed. Kudos to him for not having a little bit more emotion.
Right.
Because he almost walked off the mound twice thinking he had struck guys out.
And he didn't say a word. I was like, I would not have kept my composure there. I was shocked by that.
Well, you know what's funny, too, is because in the ninth, He should have had it, didn't get it, got it. And I thought, well, if this is it for, I thought this was it for him. So I thought while he walked to the dugout, he might have a few words for the home plate umpire. Instead, he sprinted right to the dugout. And lo and behold, he comes out the next inning.
That's what I want to see. That's what I want to see from Josh Hader. Now, he's probably not available today.
Right.
We know he's not available today. But cool to see that last night. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. So TK joins us, Todd Callis, the voice of the Astros on the shin. Mm-hmm. He joins us each and every Friday. Well, TK said something last Friday that caught my attention. And is he right about what he said? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. If you're buying a grill from Texas Star Grill Shop, you're right about what you're doing. And if you're planning on buying a grill from Texas Star Grill Shop or from anywhere else, you need to talk with the people at Texas Star Grill Shop before you do anything else. And you also need to join the club. 975grills.com to join the club, or just mention it whenever you stop by their Houston locations, wherever you're going. As a member of the club, listen to this, you'll enjoy special in-store discounts that can't be found anywhere else. The best products in the outdoor cooking world, Texas Star Grill Shop, and they're giving you prices you won't see anywhere when you join the club. From Traeger to Weber to Napoleon, outdoor pizza ovens, flat top grills, whatever you want, and they'll beat any price if you're a club member. So be part of the club. It doesn't cost you anything either to be part of the club. You just get this information that isn't privy to people who aren't part of the club. Stop falling for the trick, too, of walking into these big box stores. You see these grills outside of these big box stores. Like, oh, this is good value. Yeah, but the grill's not any good. Shop at Texas Star Grill Shop and educate yourself in the grill game. If you're going to buy a grill in this town, you want to talk to Texas Star Grill Shop first. Also, how about full free installation? You don't have to worry about 100 pieces in assembly or a box that's unloaded on your driveway. Full free assembly and delivery if you're a club member. You don't want to have to put these grills together, I promise you. Let Texas Star Grill Shop do that for you. How about the outdoor kitchens? These are popular now because they're awesome. 975grills.com. They're the best in the business at outdoor kitchens. Club members will get special pricing on custom outdoor kitchen with free consultation, and the stuff they can do is incredible. Custom cabinets around the grill. It's beautiful. Head to 975grills.com to learn more. Join the club for the best barbecue grills at the best price.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You heard Joe, one half of the Killer G's, during the break there. We're going to be out at Wakefield Crowbar tomorrow. Come hang out with us, your friendly neighborhood bar. Looking forward to that tomorrow evening. We'll get to what TK said in a matter of moments. Couple of texts here first, though. 0002, what are the odds Espada called Dusty for his lineup advice?
Zero.
Yeah, I don't think he called Dusty. I think it's 0-2. 2787, they should show these umps the calls they're missing between innings, and maybe it'll help with their zones. I feel like it would. See, this is what's interesting here. Like, I think we've went too far into the K zone is the strike zone. And by the letter of the law, it is the K zone. But each umpire is going to have their own unique strike zone. So, like, what are we umpiring here? What are we calling? Are we calling the zone? Are we calling the umpire's unique zone? Like, it's kind of become a little bit of a gray area. Where, like, the whole, like, when we were growing up, hey, two strikes, you better protect.
Right.
It's not really that way anymore.
No, it's not. And the thing is that, you know, most guys that have played the game will tell you that you just want consistency. You just want the same zone both ways. And it looked like, again, and it's fair to call me a homer because everybody knows where my allegiance is if with the Astros. But at the same time, there was a point to be made last night if you just went half inning by half inning and looking at pitches that weren't being called low in the zone for the Astros, and the Cleveland pitchers seemed to be getting them. But the bigger issue is just the umpiring overall, because if you go across baseball, it's not just – and you're going to see a doozy tonight, I'm sure, if Angel Hernandez is behind the plate.
He is. He was at first last night.
So you got C.B. Buckner. He got ripped to shreds last night by Jim Palmer because he was atrocious behind the plate. But on top of that – let's take the third base umpire and talk about the swings. There were two of them that were obvious that he wouldn't call, and it was almost like he got pressured into having to call the third one.
And they're all the same.
And they were. It was brutal that he was missing them that badly.
Espada did screw up a chance to challenge, though. Like on, if we're calling a spade, the ball that was ruled a hit by pitch when it looked like it hit
right,
the knob.
Right, the knob, yep.
Yeah, like that. That was like, let's, if we're going to critique stuff, we got to critique
that's
a
fair.
Spot of there. And he wanted to challenge it, but he had wasted too much time. Like,
yeah.
Hey, let's put our foot on the accelerator a little bit with these challenges. That was a costly play in the game.
It was, and to the to the texter's point, look, it's not going to help anybody unless it's challenged that you can replay it and show the umpire between innings. But damn straight after a game, I want the umpire, both those umpires, looking at those calls. Because that's the way a good league is run, is the fact that, look, just like
I think they do. I think they do. I know umpires that they want to know. They look at it. I guarantee it.
Because I know a lot of, to your point, from an NBA perspective, they used to have the recorded game on the DVR in the locker room of the officials because they knew which calls were controversial or they had questions about, and they would want to go back and watch it right away. But the league office does, in the NBA, the league office does critique every call in the final 2 minutes as well. I don't know how Major League Baseball works.
Yeah, they look at their zone. 3-3-1-1, Branham, your point backs up using an electric strike zone. I used to be anti-electric strike zone. I've actually come around to it. The thing, I don't like the challenge system. If you're using a challenge system, that means you're using two different zones in a game. You're using 95% of the time, you're using the home plate umpire zone. And then for the few times that you challenge, now you're using the box. So,
yeah.
Like, you're using two different zones in that specific game. If you're going to implement the challenge system that you see in minor league baseball, they should just go all in and have a 100% electric strike zone. And quite frankly, it benefits Jenner Diaz.
In Diaz's case, it does. I was curious how Verlander was going to do in the one start that he did using it. And they said that he seemed to be okay with it, and he let his catcher be the one that would question the calls because the pitcher or the catcher can do it. But my big thing is just from a time-consuming perspective, as long as it doesn't take too much time, and it seems like they've got it to be pretty efficient, I'm fine with it if it's going to be getting the main thing to get the calls right.
Yeah. So I would just go all in on it. 713-780-ESPN. All right, Todd Kalish joining us last week. Here's what he said that caught my attention. I want to ask you guys, is he right?
For the most part, this team is who they were last year. It's the same faces. It's the same dudes. The guys are getting hits. They're just not getting hits at the time you need them. So everything that can go wrong for this team has gone wrong. You can call it snake bit. You can call it whatever you want. This has been a terrible 26-game stretch. And even with all that, the last I saw, Fangraphs had them at a 45% chance to make the playoffs. So I'm okay if people want to jump off the bandwagon as long as you don't jump back on when things go well. I really appreciate the true diehard fans that stay with this team during the tough times. We've had 7 years of amazing, incredible accomplishments to give up on this team that quickly.
Is TK right? If you're jumping off the bandwagon after what has been a disastrous April, are you not allowed to jump back on?
I think it's frustration in TK. I think that's not what today's sports fan is and what we're talking about. It's a tough approach. I understand it. You always want the diehards. You want the through thick and thins, but you'll always have that. But there are just too many fans these days that wear their emotions every 24 seconds on their sleeve, depending on Twitter and what happens in a game, that just isn't how it works anymore because you want all your fans and as many fans as you can get at the biggest points in the year. But, yeah, it did catch my attention when he said it, too. It was a pretty tough statement to make, especially from a team play-by-play guy. I liked it. But it's not realistic.
Yeah, I believe with everything he said. Like, it's okay to be mad at the team and okay to be frustrated with the team and okay to call for suggestions, but that's part of being a fan. Like, part of being a fan is living through the times that are frustrating. That's what makes, like, the World Series in 2017 sweeter, is that the organization never had a World Series and the times were extremely low as recently as, like, the early 2010s. I agree with Todd Kalish. To be loyal doesn't mean that you always have to be sunshine and rainbows and everything is great. Being loyal is that's still your team. You're not
right.
Turning them off for 2 months out of the year or whenever they're, you know, 10 games under 500 that you're going to completely dismiss them and say, oh, yeah, that's like, I'm so embarrassed. I'm not even going to say I'm a fan of that team. Like that I agree with TK. Hopping off the bandwagon doesn't mean that you're not mad at them. It's okay to be mad. That's part of fandom. It's okay to critique. It's okay to offer suggestions. It's okay to say that they're awful and they're disastrous and all of these things. What's not okay is like, okay, I'm done with the Astros. I'll see you later. I'll talk to you in 5 years whenever the Astros Steelers are good again. Or I'll talk to you in 5 weeks when they're in first place again. I 100% agree with TK. You shouldn't hop off the bandwagon because the team's not playing well.
You shouldn't, but it happens all the time.
I think it's bad fans.
Well, that's fine. I mean, look at Astros Twitter, and you know how quickly they get overly emotional, and you know they don't just wear it on their sleeve.
That's okay. It's okay to be emotional.
But a lot of people are saying the season's over. They're done. It's, you know, and ready to throw in the towel early in the season because that's just how overly emotional some fans with their fandomonium get.
Yeah, that to me is fine. Like, I'm talking about the people that, like, just quit. They're done. And we saw this with the Texans. Now, the Texans had some pretty good reason, like the whole Easterby thing and all of that. But, like, you see it a lot in this city, quite frankly. When a team's not playing well or a team's not very good, it's like, okay, well, I forget that they exist. Like, we forget that the Astros, when they were losing 100 games a year, they were getting 0.0s on TV and were having no fans at the game. Which, again, like, I'm not saying that you need to spend your money. That doesn't mean that you're jumping off the bandwagon. But whenever you're just like, see ya, I'm done with them because they had a bad month, I 100% agree with Todd.
See, and that's where Houstonians get upset because they get that fair weather fan moniker is because it's because they turn on their team quickly when things aren't going well. And we've seen it across the board with all the big three. But then it's also not that you can just leave it lie. Once they are done with them, they're not done with them because now they want to crap on them. And that's where it gets more dicey because now they're on social media just absolutely looking to take shots at them as opposed to saying, if you're done, you're done. Then go find another team.
Yeah, see, the shots to me doesn't mean that you're not a fan.
No, but once you've made the statement, I'm done with this team, they're not. Because they may be done in terms of, like, being an Astros fan, so they say. But then what they're going to do is go on social media and every outlet that they can get and try and find – point fingers and try to crap on them more.
713-780-ESPN. Coming up at 4:30, we're going to give away a Highway Cantina gift card. We're going to need some people to call in. Man of the People, a new game that we're playing. So we're going to need some listeners, and you have an opportunity of winning $25 to Highway Cantina. Buy yourself some dinner on the Killer Bees. Man of the People coming up at 4:30. But coming up next, how many rookies for the Texans emerge into starters in year one? 713-780-ESPN. How many Texans rookies emerge into starters in their rookie year? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Mike Holly, U of H class of 1990, go Cougs. He's been protecting the interests of businesses for nearly 25 years. He used to protect the Heisman Trophy winner. Now he wants to protect you and your business. He's a great person. Chris Fisher over there, great people at HRMP, and they're always going to put your interest first. HRMP provides comprehensive human capital management services, including HR compliance, benefits administration, and payroll as well. HRMP will work with you, though, to customize a plan for whatever you need. You might need all of those things. HRMP's got you. You might need one of those things. HRMP got you. They're going to figure out a way to make it easy on your business and give you help where you really need help. Nothing cookie cutter about HRMP. You're not ordering off a menu. This could be a customized plan for what you and your business needs. That way you can take the time that HRMP is going to save you, spending it back into your business, growing your business, the stuff you really like doing. Their customer service second to none, too. You'll never talk to a stranger on the other side of the line. Always someone that knows you, familiar with your company. Of course, we use HRMP here at Gal, so I can speak to that customer service. Anytime I have a question, usually fire off an email. Always get a quick response. It's very easy to understand. Let HRMP take on the demands of human resources. Eliminate your HR burdens so you can get back to growing your business. Give them a call at 281-880-6525 and let HRMP customize a plan for you. 281-880-6525 or check them out at HRP.net. That's HRP.net.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.